beside her.
I think it's because I really don't want to be recorded for posterity. Good to see you all. Old friends, my daughter. Lots of lovely, familiar faces. So this begins the series that we have called Practicing with the World, Cultivating Engaged Activity. I was very keen to do this, to do this theme about how our practice, our spiritual practice, whatever form that may take, because spiritual practices take many forms, and our activity in the world, those are our impact in the world, our response to the world situation that we find, be it our close friends, relatives, on up to climate change, nuclear disarmament. Those two themes are this sort of, it's sort of like a double helix strand I feel that my life has revolved around. Going way back to really when I was a young child, I was raised in the Catholic Church, and I remember being very captivated by the idea of what was my imagination and where my imagination would go. What did things like eternity and infinity mean, and where did God exist? And at the same time, I was also really aware of the incredible imperfections of a lot of the people that I saw were considered themselves deeply religious. They often acted in ways that seemed to me as a child just totally inconsistent, if not outright cruel. And I couldn't quite put those two things together. I couldn't quite understand how you can have these sort of lofty ideals and at the same time be so imperfect. I remember one nun that taught at the school I was in, and she was a great sports person, and she really liked the people who did sports. She really favored those students a lot. And but there was a boy in the class who really didn't like sports very much. And he actually didn't like to roughhouse. He actually liked to hang out with the girls mostly. He found their energy more compatible with his. And one day she brought a girl's uniform, and she actually made him put that uniform on. And I've never forgotten that, that how could you care and do something like that? Another sort of pivotal experience in my mind that happened when I was a child, I was friends with a girl who came from a very poor family. And in time she asked if I would do a sleepover at her house. Her family lived on welfare. There was a lot of alcohol. My mom, very much, I think, to her credit, said that I could. And as a child, I went into this home of this friend of mine, and I saw how very, very different her life was. There was no sheets on the bed. There was canned milk in the fridge, and that was sort of it. She more or less, I think we were probably 8 or 9, she more or less had the charge of her younger brother, and everybody was sort of often drinking, and I couldn't understand why her circumstances were so different than mine. Why did she have to live without sort of the basic things that I just accepted as my right? Or I don't even think I thought of them as my right. It was just what I had. And she didn't have any of those. She didn't have those things. My mom was always she had a very open home, and she took in people, often strays, to live with us for periods of time. And this girl came to live with us for a year at the first year of high school, and she spent, it seemed to me, most of the year crying, a lot of it because of the treatment she received in school. Even the teachers seemed to pick on her, and she smelled, and it seemed hard to convey to her what were the things that she could do in order to fit in more, to be more socially acceptable. The lesson I sort of took from that was I watched as she cried, and I watched as my family and sort of a lot of people stopped caring so much. It seemed so hard to keep your heart open, and it seemed like there was nothing that could be done about it. I so wish I still knew this person today. I would so like to know what happened. But at that time, the lesson I sort of took from it was that I wouldn't show when I was hurt, because I felt it would be so much harder to let people know I was hurting and them not to care than to just not show it. So that brings us back to care. I think that that's what we're all in this world to do for each other, is to care. To care as deeply as you can, to try and hold your heart open, to try and care about yourself, and try and care about the world all around you. And that's often a really painful thing. I think I turned to my spiritual practice as a way, in a way, of almost trying to escape some of that, of trying to get to the place where I wasn't so enmeshed in the pains and the inconsistencies and the confusion and the... I really wanted some place where I could find some peace, where I could perhaps transcend. I don't think that I'm alone in that. I think that that has often been the case, not just me, but throughout time. There's been lots and lots of examples of trying to pull away from the world by using a practice, a discipline, to pull away from those things that are just really hard to stay open to keep your heart open to. And then you look at our world, and it seems that our world is toppling over the edge. We have an economic system that is not based on much other than profit, were thoughts of generosity or how do we look after each other. It's not really present. We live in a world where we treat animals in despicable ways. We feel that somehow they're not connected to us, that they're just there, that maybe they don't have any feelings, maybe they don't have any sensations, or maybe we just don't even have to think about it. Maybe we can just pretend that the food that we get, the chicken we get in the supermarket, sort of came that way. It was all wrapped in plastic. The world, it needs a new story. It needs a new paradigm. It needs a way, and our engagement in the world needs a way of incorporating and of deeply considering the moral and ethical and caring basis of how we are with each other and how we are with all of the planet. So, I don't want to sit here and preach. I actually want to use this time as a way that we can explore together. I think that probably these questions and concerns that I have are questions and concerns that you all have. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. And really, it's that exploration that is sort of what gives life purpose. Over these 5 weeks, we're going to explore this theme. Today, we're going to look a little bit at some historical roots that we have, some foundations perhaps, some lessons that maybe we can take from all that's come before us. Next week, we'll talk about more specifically about ourselves and how really to engage some of those really difficult emotions. I know Michael and Kate have invited people to bring their own stories forward, and I would really like to make room for that. If you have a particular thing that you would like to talk about, maybe it's some activity you're in or something that that is really challenging you, or you're inspired by, I'd like to hear those stories. Then we're going to look at conflict. Conflict is a sort of inevitable part of social engagement. Conflict is a sort of inevitable part of practice too, is my experience. The fourth session, I'm going to actually talk to you about my own experience doing some work over on Main Island with the Syrian refugee efforts, and how that has sort of coincided over the last year with my spiritual practice. And then the fifth session, we're going to talk about the path of the Bodhisattva, which is the path that we're all on. So, for today, I just wanted to begin by asking you about words when you think about your spiritual practice, or when you think about your being in the world, your social engagement in the world. What are the words that come to mind? And Michael, could I actually get you to write them? Would that be okay?
I'll hold the board, maybe something else write.
Could, this board is kind do you want to do that, Anne?
Sure.
So maybe we'll put one column here as practice.
Is this practice?
Yeah.
I've got terrible printing.
That's okay. And the other one is the world. What words come to mind?
Peace for practice.
Peace for practice.
Confusing for practice.
Confusing for practice. Freedom under practice?
Patience.
Patience.
Under both.
Under both.
Okay, it's a question.
I'm just asking you for word associations. When you think about your meditation practice, or when you think about your engagement of the world,
I would say commitment. For the world, I would have futility.
Futility.
For practice, I would have home. And the world, I would put fear.
Fear.
Oh, fear.
For practice, I'd put kindness. In the world, I put hope.
I would put community for both.
And I would, for both, I'd put not turning away.
It's getting worse as
we
go.
Should I lift it up a little?
You could also write it in the middle if it's for both.
That's true.
Between the two lists. And the third.
That's true. If it's for both, it might go down the center.
I'll just do this. Yeah, that would have been good.
Interesting.
Interesting. For...
When I think about it, both.
Okay, let's start in the middle. Maybe put it in the center.
Yeah. Curiosity for both.
Courage for both.
And not knowing for both.
Not knowing.
For both.
Busy for the world.
For practice, gratitude. For the world, joy.
Okay. It's sort of interesting. What did you notice about how that went?
We automatically started doing the common words.
It took us a little bit more time, but we started looking at where they're, in, what they're in, how they are in common. I think that, I mean, that's sort of how we usually go through things. First of all, we think of things as very separate, you know, and then as we look more deeply, we come to see that, well, really, they're not so separate at all. They're just either sides of really the same thing, because we all are in the world and we all are practicing. So it's the same body. And you know, it's like how they talk about a lotus in muddy water, you know, a lotus, the beautiful bloom of the lotus cannot exist without roots that go down into the mud. And it is those two energies and how they flow together that is going to be the focus. That's really where we want to get to. Can our spiritual practice actually help us engage in the world, help us to find a base, a clarity, you know, the world is crying out for a deeper meaning, for another way of doing things. And at the same time, can our spiritual practice, can it engage with the conflict, the confusion, the lack of peace that trying to deal with these disparate energies comes from? We're not alone. I think you could put that down, Michael, if that's... thank you very much. The world has been grappling with these energies forever, as far as I can tell. And often, often in the past, religious orders, for example, have been places where people have gone, where they separate themselves from the community, often wear robes that make them distinct, where they live a sort of very rarefied existence. Often there's rules around celibacy, you know, how you treat your body. And those things all tend to sort of pull you apart from the community at large. And those people were often considered sort of closer, more evolved, more enlightened, and they would eventually go to heaven, reach nirvana, or whatever, and the rest of us would, the rest of the community would sort of watch on. You know, they were like stars out there in the firmament. That trend seems to be actually really quite reversing now. I mean, this is a lay practice. You look at Norman Fisher. I mean, he literally left the monastery and started up Everyday Zen. And more, it seems like the spiritual religious communities all over the world are trying to re-engage the world. I also wanted to talk today about the foundations that we have. We're not coming at this for the first time. I'm a gardener. I love to grow things. And the longer I grow things, the more I grow to appreciate the soil in which I grow things. So what is soil? Soil is actually broken down rock. It's the decayed plant and animal matter. It comes, the very chemical basis of the soil comes from the Big Bang, 13.7 million, billion years ago, the foundation of our universe was created. We don't create the soil. The soil is there, it's a gift. And if we don't take care of the gift, we can lose the understanding of how important it is. We can lose our connection with our roots and our foundation. And I think in our particular lineage, it's we inherit a tradition, a practice, the energy of countless bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, that has been building the foundations of our spiritual understanding, our spiritual quest, leading, giving us an example, an aspiration. There's something that Pope Francis said in his encyclical that he put out to the world that I found very inspiring. This was the paper that he published last year, just actually shortly before the Paris climate change talks. And he put this message out to all humanity. So in it he said, our common home is like a sister with whom we share our life and a beautiful mother who opens her arms to embrace us. This sister now cries out to us because of the harm we have inflicted on her by our irresponsible use and abuse of the goods which God has endowed her. We have come to see ourselves as lords and masters entitled to plunder it all. He goes on to say, when our hearts are authentically open to universal communion, this sense of fraternity excludes nothing and no one. Peace, justice, and preservation of creation are three absolute interconnected themes. I think the understanding that Buddhism brings of the interconnection, the absolute interdependence, what Thich Nhat Hanh calls inter-are, there is no way to pull myself, yourself, apart from the whole web of life. We are deeply, completely immersed in it. Actually, this sense that we are, it's like we're a cell in this organism that's in within an environment that's all, that is connected up. And we think that somehow the cell wall that we create, the sense of I, somehow keeps us separate from that organism. But of course, it's not possible. It's not possible. So what can some of the foundations, what can some of the teachers from the past teach us about today? I was thinking about the story of the Buddha. The Buddha lived approximately 2,600 years ago, and in very different conditions from how we live. But the story or the myth that goes with the Buddha would not have continued unless it held themes that we could all see ourselves in. So the Buddha, he was born to very fortunate circumstances, as we are. He, at his birth, he was, his father was told that he could be a very great leader, or he could be a very great leader in terms of state warrior. The Buddha actually came from the warrior caste. Or he might be a great spiritual leader. The king wanted his son to follow in his footsteps. This is my son. I want him to take over. I want him to lead the people. And he really didn't want him to follow a path that would separate him from that duty, that responsibility, that heritage. And so he tried very hard to make sure that there would be nothing to encourage him to think about the problems in the world. And so he created this very sheltered existence. I think in a lot of ways, we also live in a very sheltered existence. Until the age of 29, the Siddhartha lived in an environment where there was only the good things happening. And if age and illness were banned from the environment. And yet, I guess he sensed that there must be more to life than this. There's something wrong with this picture. Why am I not satisfied? Why am I not satisfied? Why do I think that this is hollow? So the Buddha one day, he decided he would leave his comfortable home and he went out into the community. And there he saw that there was disease, decay, and death. And if you can imagine how shocking that would be, having sort of been protected from all of that, to all of a sudden see this. And he couldn't go back to his previous existence. It wasn't possible anymore. He had seen that there was this other element in life, and he left his wife and child, he left the comforts, and he went off in search of an answer to what was the base of happiness, how could one in this human body experience peace and clarity. And anyways, so he spent 6 years living a life of a very strict aesthetic life, and which was largely based on a sort of self-mortification, you know, the denial of the body. And he met many great teachers and mastered those skills quickly. But with each one of them, it still really didn't answer his question. Yes, he could find ways of sort of transcending himself. Could do incredible things apparently with his mind and his body. And then one day he decided to stop. He probably didn't know what was going to happen. He just decided, I'm just going to stop and I'm just going to sit here until I understand something. that night, as the story goes, the Buddha came to the great realization that in all of life, there is going to be an element of suffering. It's part of our heritage. That suffering, it's caused, or it's emboldened, it's enhanced by our really trying to control it, to escape it, to avoid it, and that it's possible to actually be able to see yourself do that, to become conscious of what you are doing. And that then he described the Eightfold Path, which is a way of being in the world that actually helps you to deal with that in a conscious, caring fashion. The thing that the Buddha did then was actually the reason why we still think about the Buddha, why we still study the Buddha, why we honor the Buddha, is that he didn't decide to keep that to himself. He actually went out and engaged the world. And interestingly, at that time, very much the philosophy was of a personal nirvana, personal realization that if he had somehow hit the spiritual jackpot, all he needed to do was to rest until he died. He was off the wheel of samsara. There was no need for him to do more. But he was compelled to go back into the community. And the Buddha broke with a number of traditions at his time. He also allowed any caste, any different caste member into the spiritual community. He brought women in. These were truly revolutionary things for the time, and I'm sure caused quite a bit of upset in the community. It seems that most of the great spiritual leaders have actually taken this path. They have done a personal search. They have then taken that personal search and they have gone out into their community, and they have often challenged the norms. Many have been persecuted. Many have been killed. But that need to bring their awareness, their understanding, their deep caring for everyone into the world, and they have given us a foundation. They are the soil. They are what we grow in now. And we also, in turn, will be what other things grow in. We're all part of this process of trying to understand who we are, how to care, how do we connect. I was saying to Michael this morning that last week I felt like I had to be there with my heart broken apart. And this week I sort of feel like I have to be here with my mind falling apart. there's a part of me that really wants to present this in a clear and concise and totally understandable way. And I've put loads of effort into that. But all I can hang out with is my earnest quest. And all we can do for each other is care. Because really there aren't answers. It isn't clear. It does mean getting into the muck. It isn't possible to transcend our everyday reality. Certainly give it perspective. Certainly understand that we're all connected. But it's not going to change our life in the world. It's going to be full of all of those challenges. So can we do it together? I'm going to stop talking. That's enough. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to maybe break up into groups of three. And we're going to try doing a little exercise here. And in that group, I would like you, first of all, to spend a few minutes thinking about someone or something that has deeply influenced you. And then I want you to think a little bit about maybe how that has influenced you. And then the third part is how does it make you feel today, in this moment? So do you want me to divide you up into three? Okay. So how many do we have here? So maybe just form into groups of three. And then after we've done that, I should actually outline for you more specifically. After we've done that, I want you to share with you. So we're going to give you 3 minutes to do it separately, just to give those thoughts, and I'll start passing papers and pens around. And you just take some paper and pass it on to other groups. Then we're going to give you each a chance, 2 minutes, to share with each other. And then we're going to come back into the group. And in the sharing, if you don't feel like you want to share, you don't have to. But the other two people will just listen in silence for a few minutes. And then we'll go on. And then we'll come back into the group and see what we feel. Also, privacy. What is said here needs to stay here. That way everybody can feel that they can trust in this environment. Is that clear?
Can you repeat the question?
Okay, the question is, think of something that has really deeply influenced you in your life. And it can be a person, it can be a teaching, it can be a pet. You know? And then think about how that has influenced you in your life. And then how's that impacting you right now? How does that make you feel right now in this moment? 2 minutes each.
Each, okay then.
2 minutes each. Okay. Okay. Good.